You found something?
Yes, my lord.
That's it. The rebels are there.
My lord, there are so many uncharted settlements.
That is the system. Set your course for the Hoth system.
As long as everybody behaves, this will be quick and painless.
Did you hear that? We're doomed.
Welcome to Echo Base, your weekly water cooler discussion exploring Star Wars news, issues, mythology, and understanding that galaxy far, far away.
We will use all our resources to unravel this mystery.
Dodging Imperial probe droids while leaving no topic unturned in this frozen wasteland.
You're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Now live. Dock the snowspeeders and lock up the tauntauns. It's time for Echo Base.
It's not Tatooine, that's for sure.
All wings report in.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Red 11 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
Red 2 standing by.
Right now I feel like I take on the whole Empire myself.
Cut the channel, Red 2.
Standby alert.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the base.
Close the doors.
Yes, sir.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. It doesn't feel like we're getting any closer to Celebration Orlando, but then some news dropped, and now it feels like we're getting perilously close to Celebration Orlando. But we'll come back to that in a minute. I am Eric. I am joined tonight by Lou and Chris. Chris, how you doing?
I'm pretty good today, actually.
Excellent. Excellent. And we don't need to ask how Lou's doing because his movie draft for Random Chatter is doing well, and so he's very happy.
Oh, yeah, I was ready to do my Chris impersonation.
Nope.
How you doing?
We only have room for one emo kid on this network.
I'm great. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I've been waiting for like a week to do that too.
Well, now you got to wait another week.
Oh well. No, I'm doing well.
Good. Man. So we don't have a whole lot in the way of news for this week. One of the things we do have is Orlando celebration tickets are going on sale by the time this episode gets released. As of May 25th, tickets are on sale. I don't think they're going to sell out like right away. We were just talking about this before the show started. It's not going to be like San Diego Comic-Con where you've got to get it in the first, hour or two. This isn't going to be like the episode of Big Bang Theory where they're all hitting refresh on their browser and then all of a sudden none of them gets the tickets because they're sold out. You're going to have a little bit of time. But keep in mind that this celebration could be a lot bigger than those in years past, because not only have we already had The Force Awakens, we will have already had Rogue One. And we will be ramping up toward episode 8. So, this is going to be a pretty big one. It's going to be $150, I guess, for a 4-day adult pass. And then if you want the special Jedi treatment, what, Lou, you said it was $750?
I think somebody said it was $700 on Twitter.
Okay. And what does that get you?
I think ability to jump into lines and not have to stand in really long lines, which, is part of the fun of going to a convention, I think, really.
Oh, I don't know. I'm all of a sudden, I'm okay with that skipping the lines thing.
I don't know. I mean, the only line I didn't like at Celebration Anaheim was the line we stood in line for the 3D showing of Revenge of the Sith, and then they came in and said, oh, yeah, we overbooked the room, so sorry.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well.
Yeah, but looking back at New York Comic Con.
Yeah, those lines were a little different.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that we're going to have enough expense in just getting down there in the hotel rooms that I don't know about you, but I don't think the $750 is in my budget.
No, I don't think so either.
We'll see if we get a few more Patreon donors. Yeah.
I don't know. Hit the lottery.
Yeah, I hit the lottery.
We get a suite at the hotel attached to the convention center. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy. Well, that's coming down the pipe pretty soon here. So that's for Celebration Orlando 2017. And I don't know. We got to start planning that out pretty quick here. Let's see what else. Aftermath is now available as an ebook for $1.99.
That's a bargain.
That's a big bargain. Now, the paperback hasn't hit yet, has it?
No.
Okay.
It might have. I don't think it has.
I thought it's coming soon. Yeah, I don't think it's been out yet. So this is a steal, because up until this point, you've been paying hardcover prices. $1.99. If you have not yet picked it up, this is the time to get it. I mean, at that price, even if you don't like the book, or you're not sure if you're interested in it, buy it now and then decide later. It's $1.99. It's the cost of like a large Coke from McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
So, this is the time to pick it up. Now, I don't know how long this deal is good for. I know it's available through Amazon and one other ebook retailer, I think. But
it's actually the paperback is out, by the way.
It is out. Okay, good.
Yes.
All right. Still, $1.99 is cheaper than a paperback. And you probably have your phone in your pocket anyway. So you're going to be able to read it more frequently or at more locations. Have more opportunities to read it than you would with a paperback. That's my argument anyway. You know, another thing you can do on your smartphone is play Sabacc.
Yes.
Yes. We talked about this before, fairly recently, I think. There's a Sabacc game that is now available. This is by a company called Sabacc Creative. It's available for iOS and Android. It's free. There are in-app purchases, though I haven't had a chance to investigate what they are yet. We did play a preview of it, and the game mechanics were pretty solid. I know they've updated a couple of times since I had a chance to play, so I don't know exactly what improvements they've made. But I'm looking forward to it. And multiplayer, so that's good.
Yeah, multiplayer has been kind of fun. I'm looking forward to that. They also have a video online tutorial. So,
oh, excellent.
Definitely hit that up so I can learn how to play.
That's
I should probably start playing.
I did go to the website, and they've got the rules on the website too. You know, it's weird because basically Sabacc is like a more complicated version of blackjack. And it's weird because it does get a little more complicated in the rules and the hands. And of course you've got the randomizer and the idiots array and a couple of other specialty hands that you can get. It's a little tricky. I mean, it's not, I don't think it's too hard, but yeah, I've got to brush up on some of that too. But you know, for all these years we've been wanting Sabacc, and it's like, okay, well, yeah, you can't really do the randomizer thing in the real world, but now we have smartphones and computers, and why don't we have Sabacc yet? Well, now it's here. So again, I don't have any word on whether it's actually been licensed or not. Here we go. According to the iTunes page, Sabacc trademark used under license. So there you
go. Nice. Yeah. It's official.
Yeah. It looks like it's not going to get yanked off of the iTunes store anytime soon. So that's a good thing. Let's see. Man, this has been kind of a slow news week. So hopefully the discussion will turn out to be really good. Disney movies, including Star Wars, are coming to Netflix very soon. Disney's had a contract that's been about to come into fruition, and you will be able to stream a lot of different Disney movies on Netflix now, including Star Wars. However, not The Force Awakens. That is because there was already a deal with Starz that they would get the first broadcast rights for The Force Awakens. So it's going to go to Starz first. It's going to be there for a period of time. And then after that, it will end up available on Netflix. But in the meantime, all of the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, you know, there you go. We've been waiting for a long time for that to be made available for streaming, and we're finally getting it. And episode 8, spoilers are finally starting to surface, like real honest spoilers.
La, 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 la.
I didn't say they're starting to surface on Echo Base. We are safe. We are out here in the outer regions. This is Hoth. There's nothing here. We're safe from the spoilers. But you guys out there on the internet, you might want to start, you know, paying close attention. And I know episode 8 is still quite a ways out, but yeah, we're actually starting to get legitimate looking spoilers. These are, when I say legitimate looking, I mean things that have been vetted by sources, being posted by reliable websites. And of course, all of these things are subject to change. But it's interesting. So the stuff that's been outed so far is it presents some interesting scenarios, not entirely unpredictable scenarios, but it sets up some scenes in the film that are interesting. Nothing too spoilery yet. Basically, just who is where and what different encounters characters have with one another. So just be aware the stuff is out there. Photos, I haven't seen a lot of pictures that have been spoilerish, but there have been some gorgeous pictures out recently.
Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of set photos, yeah. But nothing really that we haven't seen before.
Right. But that being said, the same set from 10 different angles is still awesome, as opposed to the same set from 2 angles. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm still like every photo, I'm just eating this stuff up. Not because I'm looking around in the background for stuff, but just because it's awesome to see.
Oh, come on. You're looking for everything you can find.
No, I don't.
Mr. He who had the entire story to The Force Awakens before he saw it.
But, you know, it's not that I had to hunt for it.
I didn't say you did, but I went into it without having any pre-knowledge. And I know.
I know you did. But
I'm just saying.
But my point is, I'm not out, you know, scanning these photos for stuff in the background, et cetera. Like I just said, I come across this stuff. I don't shy away from it, but I don't hunt it down either.
Okay.
And that being said, I think that when it gets closer to time for episode 8, and we start getting into more serious spoilers, I may dial it back, and I may not. After what happened with episode 7, that might have been what broke the camel's back in this case. That might have been my last straw on, like, going all the way with spoilers.
Hey, you heard it here, folks. You heard it here first.
There's the pre-spoilers. We're in the preseason right now.
The preseason.
This is the preseason. That's Come a sports on. Thing, right? Isn't that like?
Yes, that is a sports thing.
It's like, so you play games, but they don't count, right? That's basically how Pretty the preseason much. Works.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay. All right. So, you know, you're playing games. They don't really count. You're still risking injury for all your like overly high paid players and stuff like that. But it's still fun because there's still games, but then they don't really matter. So this is kind of the same thing. I'm risking hearing too much, but for the most part, the stuff that's out right now is of no consequence. Once we get into the actual, you know, the season, then it'll be different. I hope I'm using the sports terms right. The episode 8 title that got leaked is a lie. It's fake. So if you hear about that, don't worry about it. It's been shot down. So
plus, it's a terrible title. So
I don't know.
What was that? I think I saw it somewhere. What was that?
It was Fall of the Resistance.
That's right. That's
Tell
right,
me yeah. how that's worse than Attack of the Clowns. Clones.
It's not creative at all. Like, I don't know. I just have problems with it.
Neither was Revenge of the Sith.
But it sounds, that one sounded cool.
Revenge of the Sith was good. I mean, that was a good title.
It did sound cool. But
the Resistance can't fall this early. That's the thing. It's like, you know. Here comes Eric. He's like, I know spoilers. I'm not going to say anything.
Shoot. Moving on. Man. Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. All right. So discussion topic this week. Like I said, it's really, really light news week. That's it. We're done with the news. There's nothing else to talk news-wise. So on to the discussion. Chris, you said you have a topic, and you have not let me know what it is. I don't know if you've let Lou know what it is or not. So
I don't know.
Okay. So now I know what it feels like. All right. So what you got?
Okay, so last week I was listening to Star Wars Oxygen, which is a Star Wars music podcast that David Collins does for Rebel Force Radio. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the soundtrack for The Force Awakens and how some of the themes related back to stuff from the previous six movies. And then that got me thinking about just the film in general and how much nostalgia we got. And I started to think, because when I first saw TFA, I was like, this is the best Star Wars movie out of all of them. But after seeing it a couple more times after that, I'm kind of starting to rethink it. And part of me wonders if they had too much nostalgia and if there were moments that they did simply for the surprise factor, but the, oh, look, it's that one guy from 30 years ago. For example, they had, when they revealed the Falcon, it was like a surprise moment. When they revealed Han Solo, it was a surprise moment. Same for 3PO and R2 and Leia and Luke. So pretty much everything from the old films were there for like a surprising wow moment.
Okay.
And I didn't really think of this in a question, but I'm kind of wondering if in like 20 years, if we'll look back at The Force Awakens and think that will damage it. And I kind of wonder how they'll handle it in the future movies going forward.
Okay. So far, your feelings after having this perspective presented to you have changed a little bit from what they had been.
Is that correct?
Okay. And to summarize what's different about your feelings now, how would you summarize it?
Not as good.
Okay. The various cameos from the original trilogy were gratuitous, or they were for the sake of having the cameos.
Not really that. I can see where one would think that, but I wouldn't. I'm more talking about the way that we were presented this for the first time, or that they were revealed to us. Does that make sense?
I think so. I mean, I get, like, the scene with Han and Chewie was definitely, you know, you were thinking they were getting boarded by someone else, and it turns out it's Han and Chewie. So that was definitely a surprise. It was kind of a cheering moment.
Yeah.
Leia, I mean, yeah, I guess it was unexpected for her to show up. So I guess you could argue the same thing with her. Once you see Leia, it's not a big surprise to see C-3PO with her. I guess pulling the cloak off of R2, you wouldn't have expected R2 to be underneath a bed sheet. So, okay. Yeah, I can see that. Admiral Akbar was not a surprise. I totally knew that Admiral Akbar was going to be there in the briefing room. But that probably doesn't count.
You knew everything, Eric. So, you know,
it's really less about knowing and more just about the way they did it. Like, part of me thinks that, for example, instead of having Rey and Finn running to a random ship and then it gets blown up and then the camera flashes over and then you see the Falcon and then they play the little music cue for it. You could have, I don't know, the opening shot of the movie could be like the Falcon flying across the screen and then someone, you know, like Han or someone piloting it. Like, that would have been a more less nostalgic introduction.
Okay, you're right. But I don't know that
See, I thought of the reveals in the movie. I mean, I won't say cameos because they really had roles. They weren't just,
well, that's true,
you know, there for one scene and walked away. But I thought the Falcon's entrance was actually pretty good as things went. I think it was kind of neat to say, you know, let's take this one. No, that's garbage. And they kept going somewhere else. And then all of a sudden, okay, garbage will do. And they run back to the Falcon. It was like, wow. It was like, okay, that feels cool. It feels, you know, we got the it was nice that was like the first reveal of the old in the new movie.
Mm-hmm. No,
you know,
see,
it wasn't a character. It was a ship, you know.
I like that one. But the other ones, like, by the time we got to Luke, I'm just like, really, can we just not have someone just show up naturally, you know?
Yeah, you bring up a good point too, because the Millennium Falcon does fit what you're describing. That reveal, while we may have liked it, it is that type of a reveal. It was kind of a, oh wow, hey, I wasn't expecting that. Like, it's not something that just kind of flows into the story. I mean, I guess arguably Luke is the one that probably fits the most, because you know they're going off to find Luke. It's at the end of the film. And maybe second from that would be Leia. But I guess, you know, I never really thought about it before, but I acknowledge what you're saying, and it is a good point. I never really thought about the fact that all of those reveals were done that way. But is that a problem? Is that going to change how we look at this down the road? I think that's actually a really good question. And even if this doesn't change how we look at it down the road, are there other factors that, you know, everybody's excited about it right now, 30 years from now, are they going to be as excited about The Force Awakens? Like, how is it going to, when the dust settles, how is TFA going to rank? How is it going to be received?
Yeah. One way I just now thought about it was, let's say that they released all of the movies that we're expecting, like that includes the Han Solo film. Let's say they were released chronologically. So by the time you get to episode 4, you've already been introduced to Obi-Wan and Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
So Obi-Wan is revealed in a, you know, kind of a reveal way, like a surprise moment.
Right.
But Han is just there. So it's not one of those, oh, look, it's that guy. It's like, oh, look who it is. You know, right. It's not necessarily a in your face type of moment.
Yeah,
I think that, I mean,
but
the reveals
TFA had a lot of those.
It did.
Right. I mean, I think the reveals in TFA were good. I mean, whether they hold up, you know, 30 years from now, I don't know, because you're right, we'll be more familiar with it. It's not like we waited this long, all of a sudden, oh my God, we got to see the Falcon for the first time on screen in how many years, you know? But if they start doing that kind of thing where, you know, we have the, well, if, you know, Obi-Wan makes a cameo in Rogue One, it's going to feel very forced. No pun intended. Same thing happens if they did that, if they had him in the Han Solo movie, you know, there's no reason for their paths to cross. You could do it, sure. It might be kind of cool and gimmicky, but there's no reason for their paths to cross before A New Hope. So why would you? Why would you put that in there and do that?
Right.
That, to me, would feel worse than anything we saw in TFA. If they're trying to really bring characters in and just give them a little cameo here and there.
Yeah. Well,
you know, in future movies.
For what we did see in TFA, I don't have a problem with how they did it, because as a fan of the original trilogy, it felt good every time I had one of those moments. But what it does point out, now that you mention it, Chris, it does point out how reliant upon the original trilogy TFA is. I don't personally think that it is just a ripoff of A New Hope. I do see the similarities. I wanted there to be similarities, and I think that it's good to hearken back to A New Hope. I think that was needed to not only bring this this continuation of the story in and have it resonate with the fans again, but also to bring back the fans that were lost for one reason or another during the prequel era. So I think that was wise, but this thing you're pointing out about the way these characters were revealed, if you think about someone seeing The Force Awakens as their first Star Wars film, when Han and Chewie come on to the Millennium Falcon, not only are they not going to understand why all the people around them are all excited about it, but it's like, wait a minute, these two characters walk in, and now they're pulling Rey and Finn out from whatever this little grate is that they're hiding in, and now they're acting like they own the ship, and they just come in and they take over, and you know they're turning mm-hmm. their backs on these two people that they found in their ship, and why are Rey and Finn okay with these people taking over the ship? Like, there's no context. Now, granted, in 2016, as much of a cultural significance that the original trilogy had, it's hard for anybody now not to kind of know who Han Solo is. But I guess if you look at like upcoming generations, if they were to see TFA as the first film, it doesn't hold up very well as a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make it really reliant upon the stories that had those three/four primary characters in them, if you also want right. to include Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here, but let's put this in context of another movie that we talked about recently on the Flick Fights podcast, John Wick.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about that movie being a character that was central to the story that obviously had some sort of huge background that we're not getting any information on, and yet it worked in the movie. And it's hard for us to take TFA and say, okay, we have no background on Han and Chewie and everybody else. But just put yourself in that situation for a minute. If you didn't know anything about them and these two guys showed up and there was a couple things where they gave away, you're Han Solo. And, you know, they knew of them, but didn't, I thought that was all myth. I didn't realize that was the truth. And now I know you're the owner. This is the Millennium Falcon. And, this is your ship. You know, they knew all that. Mm-hmm. If you didn't know that as a viewer, would that work for you? Kind of the same way John Wick did?
No, I don't think it would work. I think that Luke at the end would kind of work. Like, you wouldn't really understand why Luke is so important, but you kind of get that, okay, well, that's the old wizard that they're looking for at the end of their quest for this film. That's fine. When Leia shows up, you've kind of already been dealing with Han for a little while. And based on the way the conversation goes, you get right off the bat, right away, that they have had a previous romantic relationship that apparently didn't work out too well. And she is right off the bat treated as if she is some sort of a leader. So there's some context there for Leia that works, but I think the reveal for Han and Chewie wouldn't make any sense at all. Nor the scene that they then build from that. There's just no context.
What scene building from that would?
Well, them coming aboard the Falcon, them talking to Rey and Finn for the first time. It's not until they get a little bit deeper into that conversation where it starts to make a little bit more sense. I just think, and again,
I do kind of think that works for them, even if you didn't have any history in who they were. They give you bits and pieces as they go along. It turns right into a huge, action scene with the Rathars and, the two groups fighting
them. That's a few minutes into it. I'm talking like right when it happens. And then that initial conversation, it's not until, and then Han goes and he goes into the cockpit and stuff like that. And then, they're pulling up the map. There's like the initial conversation. And then there's basically a cut scene to another conversation. And mm-hmm. like initially, I kind of feel like it's in the second part of that. After the cutscene, it starts to make sense. You're right. Now we're starting to get some context. But I think initially, again, for someone who has never seen a Star Wars film at all, if they're watching TFA as their first film, I think that you have a few moments there where you don't really get why this guy and this big creature with him come mm-hmm. in like they own the place, and like nobody really has any serious issue with one another.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to have to pose that question to my wife, tell you the truth, because she saw TFA when we were on the cruise, and she hadn't really seen anything from Star Wars, you know, besides the first movie back when she was a kid. So,
but she knew who Han Solo was.
Right, she does. She has a context of who they were, I guess. Falcon. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
It wouldn't be just raw going into it without any knowledge, but.
Right. It's hard in 2016 to not, even if you haven't seen the films, you know, they've interviewed people or people have posted YouTube videos of family members who had never seen Star Wars, and they go and watch the movie and they're like, oh, now I understand what this means and that means and that means. I had a coworker who did that exact thing. And she was like, now I understand all of these pop culture references. And she just went down a checklist of them because yep. those are all part of our lives, even if we haven't seen Star Wars. So like the example that we're using here, I think is currently really moot, but in the future, you know, that might be more of a thing, but let's go back to, I said, when the dust settles, I think that this introduces a bigger question. Chris, what you were talking about down the road, if we look back at TFA, how are we going to look back at TFA?
Mm-hmm. And for me, it's already, and it's not really even the film. It's not really even this, these aspects, but I got the Blu-ray when it came out, and I was expecting to go home and want to watch it, or when I did eventually have time to watch it, I'd sit down to watch it all the way through, but I got like maybe halfway and was like, eh, I can turn it off now, which was weird because mm-hmm. I didn't expect that. So, and I didn't really know what to think either.
And the funny thing is, as a Star Wars fan, the people I've talked to who have expressed that very thing, they say it with hesitation, like they say it with guilt.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. Like I can sit and watch, especially episodes 5 and episode 1 all the way through every time. Don't have to skip anything or start at a certain spot. I can go from beginning to end, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But this one was just different. Like even the third time in the theater, I was checking my watch like, okay, when is this going to be over?
I can tell you why. I've been thinking about this quite a bit, and I imagine that there are a lot of people listening to the show right now who have felt that. They've, you know, they saw it so many times in the theater, they got home, they watched the Blu-ray, and then it kind of sat on the shelf. Like they were excited to get the Blu-ray. They probably checked out all the bonus features, which are awesome, by the way. But they got kind of exhausted with it. Like they got to the point where it's like, I'm not excited to watch this. And then because they're, again, I hate using the word diehard Star Wars fans, but they are diehard Star Wars fans in the sense that to them, Star Wars is something that they're very passionate about, however you decide to define it. Because they're Star Wars fans, they felt guilty. How can I feel this apathetic now
mm-hmm.
toward this thing that I've been so excited about for 2 or 3 years? I think what it is that for so many of us, the original trilogy, and then eventually the prequel trilogy, they've been around long enough that they have context in other parts of our lives. Like for me, Empire Strikes Back goes way, 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 way back, all the way back to when I was a little kid and the toys and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, later, high school, we got a bunch of friends together, and on a Saturday, we just kind of did a marathon viewing of the trilogy on VHS. And it wasn't so much that we were really watching the movies. We were kind of watching the movies, but we were also socializing. But I remember that event very vividly. And then later, you know, we used to loop it in the background while we were playing the collectible card game at a friend's house. And like there are moments that these films either create in our lives or are attached to in our lives. And even the prequels, I mean, episode 3 came out in 2005. That's over 10 years ago now. So there's a full decade, longer than my son has been alive, that those films have we've gone back and watched them repeatedly. And here's the thing. I saw episode 1 in the theater twice. I saw episode 2. I think I saw it in the theater twice. And episode 3, I saw either once or twice. I probably saw it twice. And that's it. And The Force Awakens, I only saw it twice. In fact, I think my wife ended up accidentally seeing it more than I have. And I kind of predicted that this was going to happen. And then I got the Blu-ray and I watched it a few more times. And then, again, like, I'm not anxious to go back to it yet. But I will be later. Right now, we've had this buildup and we consumed as much as we could of it. And our stomachs are full. And it's like after Thanksgiving dinner. And we're like, oh, no more food, please. It was really good, but let me just let this settle first. Let me digest this. I think that's all it is. I think it's both of those things combined. It's the fact that we're
definitely not as familiar with this as we are with the older movies.
Right.
And that does mean a lot as far as the weight of the movie in terms of what it means to you. I'll even go a step further than that, too. I still play that trivia game that they've changed their rules a little bit, so how it's easier to play. But the questions for TFA versus the rest of the trilogy, I'm not just immediately knowing the answer. I'm thinking, oh, when was that in the movie and where did that? Oh, that was okay. So I'm not as quick on the answers for the TFA stuff because it's not it hasn't marinated in my mind as long, you know. I don't have the answer to, you know, one of the questions was who was, you know, Rey fighting or, you know, what was Rey doing when we first saw her, when Finn first saw her on Jakku. And I've got to go back in my head, rewind the movie to that scene, look at it in my mind and go, okay, that's what she was doing. Not like, you know, the question about A New Hope. It's like, oh yeah, that's just so-and-so, you know.
Right.
It's like rote memory almost and a big difference between that and how you view TFA. You know, I don't have that same feeling, though, of not wanting to view it. I mean, I'll admit, I have the Blu-ray. I haven't watched it yet all the way through because I haven't had time. I feel guilty about that, like you were saying, but it's not that I wouldn't. If I had time to do it right now, I would sit down and watch it right now because I do enjoy the movie, and I want to, you know, get it to the point in my life where it's more ingrained like the other movies are.
But
yeah, I haven't seen it 100 times, but, you know.
Using that Thanksgiving analogy again, you're the guy at the table who didn't stuff himself. You ate a good normal sized portion.
I'm gonna pace myself. You're saying
you ate healthily, and we did not. We gorged ourselves, and now we're sitting in the living room with, you know, in the recliner with the footrest up, not wanting to move, watching what is it? Is it football that you watch when you can't move on Thanksgiving? And
wait, you know what? I know what it is. I have the answer.
Okay.
I'm not as full and stuffed from watching the movies like you guys were because I had the gentle rocking of the ocean to help me digest that.
Oh, gosh. You and the cruise.
I had to bring that up again. I'm sorry.
You are hereby forbidden from ever going on a cruise again. But I think that it's, you know, it's twofold. It's that it's not been around long enough yet for it to make a direct connection with very many emotional moments of our lives on individual bases. And then number two, we consumed a lot of it all at once. And now we just need to kind of catch our breath. And later on, I mean, we're going to how many people before episode 8 are not going to be sitting there and watching The Force Awakens? Probably more times than they've seen it as of right now. It's just it's going to happen over time. We cannot expect it to have the same emotional resonance a few months after its release as even the most recent film, episode 3, has after 11 years of release. And especially not as the original trilogy. It's just not going to happen yet. We can't expect it to do that. And therefore, we should not feel guilty when we don't feel that connection yet. Or when we feel a certain apathy toward watching it again. I love the film. I mean, I love the film. If you look at my flick chart list, I forget exactly where in the top 10 it is. I think it's in the top 5 somewhere. I love this film probably.
Well, that was more than I was going to ask you. But after we got out, like the week after, you were saying that was probably your favorite Star Wars movie. Where is it now?
I think at the time I said it may be, and after a day or two I said it's at least solidly tied for number 2, mm-hmm. and it remains there. But right now it's again going back to the Thanksgiving dinner analogy. That can be some of the best food I've ever eaten. I don't want to eat any more of it right now because I'm full. But I look forward to a few days later when I can have leftovers because it was really good. Well, to me, that's kind of the same thing about The Force Awakens. I love the movie. I don't want to watch it again right now. There's other content I need to catch up on. I'm going through the books right now. I just finished Lost Stars and I'm in the middle of Bloodline. Like, I'm still getting a good diet of Star Wars stuff. And I did eat a lot of The Force Awakens. And I'm looking forward to having more of it later, but I need to let my stomach settle. So I think that's my perspective on that whole phenomenon. Because, you know, you're not the first person, Chris, who has expressed those feelings toward The Force Awakens. Like, I like the movie. I don't know what's wrong, but I have no interest in watching it right now.
You know, all this food analogy makes me, I keep thinking of, was it The Meaning of Life, Mr. Creosote, where the guy's like, breath mint, sir, one thin wafer? I'm thinking it's going to explode after all the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. So, fast forward a little bit. What do you think, that your opinion of The Force Awakens is going to change later on? I don't know if you want to look back to how it may have changed after watching the prequels or, you know, decades after the original trilogy. Do you think that your feelings about The Force Awakens now, do you think they're pretty solid, or do you think that maybe they're still affected by how recent the film is? Do you think it's going to change over time? I'm talking, like, let's say 5 years down the road. What do you guys think?
I think so, simply because there will probably be aspects that get revealed in later movies that make me appreciate things that happen in TFA more. You know, for example, Rey's lineage or why she's so powerful, like that, especially that second point is one criticism I have of the film. And I think, you know, later on, I won't have that criticism. So, you know, it won't be that bad, but
that's a good point.
I mean, I think in some ways it will definitely be improved, assuming that we get answers to all these questions. But I also think that over time it will definitely decrease in value, I guess you could put it. Revenge of the Sith was one thing for me. I saw that when I was like, I don't know, 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was my third favorite behind Empire and A New Hope. And now it is next to last.
Hmm.
So.
Interesting. You know, looking at episode 3 for me, I enjoy the opening sequence. The whole thing with General Grievous, I don't get into that scene as much as I did the first time around. And the part of the movie that I enjoy the most, the lightsaber battle with Anakin and Obi-Wan, is interspersed with, one of the scenes I disliked the least, or disliked the most across the entire prequel trilogy, which was the lightsaber battle between Yoda and Palpatine. And I think part of it was the quality of the effects used. It made it feel like, you know, here I am watching two actors or stuntmen, but it appeared to be the actors, obviously, having one of the best choreographed sword fights I've ever seen in cinema, interspersed with scenes from what are obviously two computer-generated characters. And when you put them side by side like that, it looks like Yoda and Palpatine, like it's a video game. Like, it just, to me, it was really difficult to watch. And I think that that's bothered me more over time. Episode 2, I have learned to enjoy more over time. Episode 1, I think, has kind of stayed the same. Maybe, I don't know. I think I've gotten a little bit more of an appreciation for the end of the film than I used to. But The Force Awakens, I think if I had to project myself in the future, I think that I would probably not enjoy much of the scenes with the First Order and with Kylo Ren. But I think the rest of it, I would probably enjoy just as much, if not more. Like you said, Chris, I mean, a really important point is that there are a lot of questions that we don't have answered yet, or things for which we don't have context in the greater scheme of the galaxy, that episodes 8 and 9 might flesh out for us. So in a lot of ways, I think I'll probably like it better. But as far as scenes that I will feel an urge to fast forward through, I think a lot of the stuff with the First Order.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Lou, what about you? Any thoughts on that?
I think, both you guys had some good thoughts about how these movies are going to age with us. But I tend to look at the movies in terms of their trilogy. I've got favorites within each trilogy, but I kind of look at the entire 3-episode story as one story in its entirety. I am kind of hoping that 7, 8, and 9 become my favorite story if it's done right. I mean, I don't know where we're going to go with this, so I have no idea. But I'm sure I will look at this as how TFA fits into its trilogy and what it means to the overall story. There are, good things and bad things in each of the Star Wars movies that, I like some parts and don't like other parts. And some parts you're sitting there going, okay, when do we get to the next scene here? Is this almost done yet? But for the most part, I don't have a problem with any of the movies in general. Just I watch them for what they are.
Yeah.
I try not to, this is the one I don't like that much. I try not to do that because if any of them are out there in that listing, it's probably The Phantom Menace for me, because it just wasn't the story not that I didn't like the story. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the story I wanted.
Right.
I wanted to get 3 movies of basically episode 3. Maybe the first half of the first movie could have been Anakin, in happy times and, learning his craft. And then I would have liked to seen a movie and a half worth of his fall to the dark side. And then maybe, the last half of the last movie about him rising to power in the dark side. That would have been
right. How
I wanted that trilogy to run.
Yeah.
We could have an entire discussion on how the previous films have aged over time compared to what they were now, or what they were when they were released, especially the prequels.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk about the original trilogy, but not about the prequels in that particular context.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point.
Go ahead, Lou.
I was going to say, what do we think? Did the original trilogy age better than the prequel trilogy's aging? I mean,
yes.
Arguably, I think the prequel trilogy was so set in a time that, you can tell when that was done. Whereas the original trilogy is more classic filmmaking, and it really doesn't have a time frame that was set into, if that makes sense.
I think the ending battle of Return of the Jedi, where they are going around the second Death Star, even the original theatrical release looks better than some of the CG we saw in episodes 2 and 3.
And arguably, I have to say that that's probably one of the biggest story moments in the entire saga, across all 7 episodes so far. The ending of Return of the Jedi, everything, the battle on Endor, the battle on the Death Star, the battle in space around the Death Star, all 3 of those that are going on, they were all impactful. They were all moving in some way. And I just I mean, it was truly epic. Like, mm-hmm. the actual definition of the word epic, that fits there more than anywhere else in the entire saga. And, you know, I liked, like I said, I liked the lightsaber battle at the end of episode 3. And I thought for the most part, again, other than the presentation of the Yoda Palpatine battle, I thought episode 3 had a good ending. But really, if you look at the strongest moment of any of the films, even as much as we all, drool over Empire Strikes Back, nothing can touch the end of Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's one thing you were talking about earlier, Eric, is how I feel like you were saying that the Yoda Sidious battle is distracting compared mm-hmm. to what we see with Anakin and Obi-Wan. That's not how I feel about Return of the Jedi. Like, every battle between, no matter if you're talking about the space battle, the one between Luke and Vader, or what's going on the ground, like, all of those stories, for the lack of a better word, they're all engaging. So you're not
right.
You're not sitting there thinking, oh, hurry up and get through this. I want to go back to the lightsaber fight.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I have to say, of anything across the entire saga that they really got right, the end of Return of the Jedi was definitely very satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
those three stories coming together all at the same time.
Yeah.
Were powerful each in their own way. And it just, you're right. I loved it. It was a great moment. When each one of them are getting their win, you know?
Yeah. And it's something that they tried to do at the end of episode 1. And it didn't work quite as well. Like, the Jedi battle kind of worked.
Right.
The raid on the palace, it mattered, but it wasn't that interesting to watch. The Gungan battle, I thought, was really good.
I liked the Gungan battle, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that fit. But then the battle in space was a joke. It was a distraction. Every time they got back into space, I'm like, oh, no, let's just either go back to the Gungans or go back to the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have to sit there and keep wishing that the film would cut back to a different scene, like you're the editor, like it's a choose your own adventure book or something, then there's a problem. And I never once felt that way during Return of the Jedi.
No. Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, Lou, about how the original trilogy would settle, I think it still holds up. I think that after watching it with my son a year or two ago and trying to get him into it, you know, this is every, of my generation, this is every dad's proud moment to bring their child into Star Wars. And it bombed. It was horrible. Daddy, there's a lot of talking in this movie. It holds up okay, I think. I think Return of the Jedi holds up much better, music video aside. And Empire Strikes Back, I think, is probably, like, it holds up better than anything else in the original trilogy. I think, Chris, the prequels really haven't been talked about much this mm-hmm. way. I think at some point we should go back and talk about that.
I think, too, that eventually episode 1 will, if I had to make a prediction, episode 1 will be the one that is, in terms of maybe not story, but as far as effects and attention grabbing goes, it will be the one that gets the most praise, which a lot of people probably would disagree with that, but
I'm surprised to hear you say that myself.
Really? I kind of agree with him.
Really?
Well,
I think that for all the hatred there is over that movie, I just don't see that becoming the one that's going to be the flag bearer for the prequel trilogy.
Well, no, you're talking about the effects, right, Chris?
Effects and...
but we're just saying the movie itself being the one that's going to hold up that prequel trilogy?
Yeah. In terms of effects and lasting, I think people will eventually grow to appreciate Phantom Menace in ways that you really can't right now.
Okay.
Because, I mean, look at, and I don't want to be one of those guys, but I was, when The Force Awakens was being made, I was very happy that they were doing practical effects. Mm-hmm. Because all you had to do is look at the documentary for episode 3 to see just the ridiculous amount of green screen and blue screen that they used. And yeah, I recognize that they built some sets and they had miniatures and stuff, but they used blue screen in times when they could have made an actual set. And they didn't do that for The Phantom Menace. So, well, I mean, they did, but they didn't do it as much, especially if you watch the documentary for that one. But if you go back and look at a lot of stuff in episode, I think episode 2 is the worst, honestly, as far as visual goes. You can tell that that is an early 2000s CGI movie.
Which is odd because it seems like it, in some ways it went downhill.
Yeah.
You know, I never had a problem with Jar Jar visually. Yeah, the CG is a little dated, but like that part of it never bothered me that much. But look at Oda Gunga. Look at Naboo. The scenery, of Coruscant, the scenery for a lot of this stuff, a lot of the things that were computer generated, the environment for the pod race, it worked. I mean, visually, I think that episode 1 was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And episode 2, other than, not Geonosis,
Kamino?
Kamino. Can't believe I blanked on that. I thought Kamino looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Geonosis looked okay, except I didn't like the assembly line chase. And I didn't like the obviously computer-generated C-3PO. You know, the battle droid head on 3PO's body, 3PO's head on the battle droid body. A lot of the battle droids didn't work for me. The bigger, like outside of the arena, the bigger battle I thought was okay, but inside the arena, with the battle droids and the Jedi, the battle droids just never quite worked for me there. And the irony is that they did work for me in Phantom Menace. So I'm not really sure what happened there, but yeah, when it comes to effects and visuals, Chris, I agree with you. Lou, do you not feel that that's the case?
From The Phantom Menace, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the visuals in the prequel trilogy never really bothered me. I mean, it wouldn't have been the choice I would have made. I like the way they did TFA much better, but, you know, that's what the filmmakers did, and I'm okay with that. I was less happy with the story, you know?
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, the jokes, those are the kind of things that pulled me out of that world I wanted to be involved in, and just, you know, the jokes that 3PO would crack about, you know, I'm beside myself. And, you know, that was kind of,
well, that was, yeah, episode 2.
Throwaway humor that just didn't really work for me at all. And then, you know, the whole Jar Jar thing, while the graphics for Jar Jar weren't bad, I didn't like the character. You know, it was just too slapsticky for me. And that didn't, that's why I don't care for the prequel trilogy as much as I think I could. Take out that comedic element to it and it'd be a different story.
And, you know, when we talk about looking back at the prequels, I don't mind Jar Jar that much now. I agree with you. I will never, the so-called humor at the Battle of Geonosis is never going to work for me.
Right.
Not only one of the worst Star Wars moments, but one of the worst film moments of that whole era. Just, ugh. Jar Jar, I've become much more accepting of the character and the role, and not because of things that happened outside of the Phantom Menace, but actually within the Phantom Menace, I don't really mind him. And that's a change for me. I mean, I never really hated him before, but I did dislike him. And now I don't dislike him anymore. I have at least a little bit of an appreciation for him. I wouldn't call it a fondness. but my opinion on him has definitely changed and improved.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can't say the same, but I can respect that.
That's fair. But what I think we're going to wrap it up for this week. I think we probably should go back at some point and have a discussion about looking back at the prequels from today.
Sure.
But especially now that we have the beginning of a bookend that kind of counterbalances it. You know, that was the beginning of the story in the cinema. We are now coming to maybe not the end of the story, but a new most recent part of the chronology. So I think it would be interesting to go back and look at that.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, that's going to do it for this episode of Echo Base. Any last comments? Last thoughts?
Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Well, we want to hear your thoughts. So email us at echobase@randomchatter.com. We would love to know. I think the two things I'm most curious about that I want to hear from the listeners on. Number one, what are your thoughts about your thoughts changing? Do you think that you're going to have a different level of appreciation for TFA down the road? Or are there any major changes, either pro or con, toward the prequels or the original trilogy now that a lot of time has passed? Have you gained appreciation for them? Have you lost appreciation for them? Is there something that's been a radical change for you? And the second thing is the guilt factor. Have you experienced what we were talking about earlier about kind of a sense of apathy toward watching The Phantom Menace now, and then maybe feeling guilty about it because why, if you're a real Star Wars fan, why would you feel that way? So either of those two things, or anything else, actually, just shoot us an email, echobase@randomchatter.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork, or on Twitter at, this podcast is Echo Base Podcast. You can find the network at Random Chatter. And then, of course, you can follow each of us on Twitter as well. I'm at Eric Blythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. Lou, where can we find you?
My name, Lou Secchi, L-O-U-S-E-C-K-I.
And Chris?
The Curse of Chris.
All right. You can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We've got a pretty good selection of different content there that I would like to think that by now most of the listeners have been checking out. And don't forget to check out our live shows as well. Every Tuesday and Thursday night, starting at about 9 to 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time, we set up a live stream. You can go to randomchatter.com/live. You can see the stream there. And, well, I say see the stream. It's mainly just audio. But there's also a chat room there that you can participate in. Or if you are a Ustream user, you can just search for Random Chatter and you can find us that way. We would love it if you tell your friends about us and leave reviews, you know, help get the word out about the show. We'd really appreciate that. And one last thing, we want to give a shout out to all of our Patreon donors out there who are helping us keep the lights on. Shout out to Bradley, our latest donor. Thank you very much for that. This is all going toward network expenses, and whatever's left over will hopefully assist us in getting to Celebration. So, it seems like so long from now, and yet it also seems like it's right around the corner at the same time. But that's it for this week of Echo Base. Until next week, take care, everybody.
The Force will be with you always.